Hi everyone, welcome. Yes, it is time. It is another Memory Lane feature on The Devil's Mouth. These ones are less frequent, so they're a bit more special. And because musicians are sometimes a finicky bunch, they often don't like to talk about their past. But we've been lucky and we've found a few who don't mind. And one of them is one of my favorite musicians, my dear friend Adi from Solstaff here. Hello, welcome.
Hey, Jose. Nice. Thanks for having me again.
Again, yes. You are one of the repeats who has now done both the features on the podcast, and deservingly so. So you agreed to talk about the birthday boy, Svarti Sandar. 10 years old already on the past 14th of October. You will, of course, celebrate that by playing it at Roadburn. It has been announced, so that will be special. Our Portuguese listeners especially might know that we did a little retrospective feature on all your records a couple of months ago for a Portuguese magazine, and that's how the seed of the idea of having you here was born. And at the time, I remember that you said that the, not only for this record, you said this for a couple of them, but that the story for this record would deserve a book. So many are the episodes that took place. That seems to be something that happens a lot with Solstaff here, right? Albums are frequently sources of many stories for you guys, isn't it?
Sure. You know, you're putting the pressure high here, man. Okay. So I'm
just quoting you.
I know, but you know, it's just these albums are like it started more like with when we did In Blood and Spirit, which is sort of a debut album.
Yeah,
I mean, that it took like almost 3 years from since we walked into the studio until it came out. So much happened. So that's sort of the idea of sort of the experience of making an album is like a book, because there are a few characters, there are you know, places and things that happen, and
a few subplots that happen, right?
Yeah, this. Of course, a lot of things happen. I mean,
but... So just to contextualize, you had done Cold 2 years before, yeah. And that was a bit of success for the standards at the time, at least, right? You toured Europe with it and everything. So
yeah,
where were the roots of Svarti Sandar? When did you went from Cold mode to Svarti Sandar mode?
We go a little bit back. So it's mid-2007. And we're basically writing Cult. There's no pressure, there's no touring. We're not a touring band by then, so there's not really a record label waiting for it. And so we're writing Cult for like a whole year, the whole of 2007. Mm. Then in December we fly to Sweden to record it, and it comes out 2009. Mm-hmm. So that comes out 2009. I'm living in Scotland and England, and Grimm is living in England. So I've just moved from England again. So we're sort of in the state of, are we going to locate the band back to, are we going to locate the band to the mainland? Yeah. So we're sort of there, because we've been doing so many of these one-offs, flying to Berlin, flying to this festival, touring Finland, you know, trying to get a gig in London. So we sort of thinking, are we going to relocate the band to London to be there?
Yeah.
So those sort of ideas sort of drift away, but you know, but for a while, me and Gumi were there, living both, and Svavar was going to come back. He had been living there with his ex-girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And we already had been rehearsing with a session guitar player, that it was going to, you know, sort of, because Gringo has a kid, but he had a real, you know, young kid that he's not going to move away from, of course.
Yeah.
So we were going to have a session player sort of standing in for Gringo while we would be chasing this sort of UK dream of ours. And that was sort of prior to Svarti Sandar came to the picture. The most memorable thing is when we meet this guy who's working for Spine Farm, and we were on Spine Farm back then.
Yeah.
And Spine Farm got bought by Universal. So we go to, me and Gomik drive down to the Universal building in Hammersmith in London. And it's very much, if you've seen the movie, The Story of Anvil. They are at Sony Records or something, and it's just total Spinal Tap stuff going on. So we go to this huge building in Hammersmith, and we go to this, and we sort of look at each other. I mean, this is it, man. We're going into the fucking Universal building in London. I mean, this is it.
Rock stars, we've arrived.
Rock star shit. You know, we go to this office, there's a lot of people talking. We're like, fucking hell, we're like the hot shit around here. And the guy talks about, you know, Gibson endorsement, this endorsement, you know, blah, 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 blah. Support the Fields of the Nephilim. Sisters of Mercy are possibly going to be touring again. Wow. We were like, really? You're like our dream date. Where have you been all our life? And we're like, fucking hell, this is it. Nothing of that never happened.
Never happened, yeah.
No. So we were, you know... there was a new executive then later on in Spine Farm. There were so many executives, new bosses coming and going on Spine Farm in Helsinki. And all of a sudden, a friend of ours is the boss, and we're like, hey, we just want to get the fuck out of here. I mean, it's just been a disaster. So he was like, okay, if you want to go, I'm not going to keep you. And because they had an optional album. So we sort of piss off from that, and we quit all this UK stuff. It goes, you know. So we are all, by 2010, we are all in Iceland.
Yeah.
Because I have nothing here written, or I'm not looking at anything. I'm not even Googling anything.
Right.
So I think we are playing A Hole in the Sky in Bergen.
Right.
I think it's 2010.
Right.
So, you know, that's a nice time. It's the first time I met Alan. I met Alan there.
First time meeting Alan is also an important...
Yeah, it was like a brief moment. I knew how, you know, we were like a little bit, you know, I knew who he was. He knew who I was. We were like, oh, it's you. So it was kind of cool. And that was the first time we sort of met Michael Barbarian. So we had we are only doing stuff from Cult and Masterpiece, and we're like a young hipster kid, drinks a lot, and it's kind of popular in this class. And we're sort of a fresh young band then, even though we are a 15-year-old band. But we were sort of the young band on the stage, and you know, we were sort of an excited thing. So at least that's the way we felt. And you know, we were party animals. People were drawn to our sort of way of partying, and especially, I mean, the party in our hotel after that gig, I think it's like two or three people died that was in that party. All the bands. And anyway, it was crazy stuff. We're playing stuff. We're playing Ritual Fire. We're playing Missionary Head. We're playing Goddess and a lot of sort of stuff from the Masterpiece and Cold album. And so we meet Michael there, and he was a fan of the Cold album. And we had a meeting. I think Michael was probably still drunk, but he would not admit it now. He would say, what's your son? Very hungover.
That explains it.
Yeah. Anyway, so we meet Michael at this restaurant, and we start talking to Michael. But at that point, we were sort of the hot chick in the class. We could sort of pick between who was going to take us to date. There were some labels after us, and because you know, we were sort of, word of mouth spreads around fast, so some labels knew that we were free. But we liked Michael, still like Michael. So it ended up that we would sign to Season of Mist. And at that time, we are all living in, like I said before, we are living in Iceland. Svavar, however, is living in the Eastfjords, where he's working at this aluminium factory. We come back to Iceland, so it's like we've been living in exile. But we move back to Iceland. None of us have jobs.
Yeah.
Except Svavar. He's working in this sort of nuclear factory. It's basically like, you know, a nuclear power plant or something. Yeah.
Chernobyl of Iceland.
Chernobyl of Iceland. So he would come to Iceland, to town, like, I don't know, once a month or something. I don't know.
Right.
But we borrow this rehearsal place because that then sort of Cult was done and we knew, okay, we have a new label. We're gonna write a new album. So this is probably, I mean, okay, help me out here. Does Svartir Sandar come out 2011?
Yeah. 2011, yes. October of 2011.
So we record Svartir Sandar in May 2011.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which means that we are writing it 3 months prior to it. So let's just say in January of 2010, we are sort of starting to write it. Because we set out to show up every day.
Yeah. I actually look here at the Hole in the Sky poster, and that was August 2010 when you played Hole in the Sky. So
yeah, okay, so that goes fast. So we meet Michael August 2010, but January we have no new songs and we're starting to write.
Mm-hmm.
So we showed up, we borrowed this rehearsal place from our friends in a band called Brain Police.
Yes.
And they were kind of inactive at that time. So we would show up at 9 in the morning when Gringo would take this son to the kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And we would just write. We would have a DAT tape with just one microphone, SM58,
mm-hmm.
plugged into it. And so we would just be writing a lot of stuff and ideas and constantly been listening in this sort of little sort of...
Yeah, so the DAT was recording all the time, right? Just to capture everything.
Yeah. But, you know, we would record stuff and then we would go and play it again, listen, mm-hmm. sort of mm-hmm. trial and error.
Yeah.
A lot of it. So, you know, Svavar would come and we would do more stuff. And so that was sort of for 3 months, we showed up every day. I mean, even Saturdays, Sundays. And we would just work basically from 9 to 4. Then the kindergarten would close and Gringo would go pick up the kid and the workday was over. That was how it was.
Very rock and roll, isn't it?
Very rock and roll. Basically just smoking cigarettes and drinking yogurt the whole day and coffee. I mean, there was no drugs, alcohol involved in making this album. It's just a complete sort of guys in a band in a work mode.
Very family oriented experience for this.
Very disoriented, toxic family oriented stuff. Right. Because, you know, even though we were working all the time, we would have fights. I mean, sort mm-hmm. of, we would have not talked to each other that day.
We what all had would the fights be about? Like an example.
Fights would
about
be
the music
about,
itself? Or?
No. You don't like my idea. You think your idea is better than mine.
Ah, right. That sort of thing.
So, yeah. It's a little bit ego-driven stuff.
Yeah.
So this is 2010. So mm-hmm. for anyone who knows about our history, a few years later, we would sort of, you know, depart with Gumi, the drummer. So this is 2010. At that time, the morale in the band is kind of bad. I mean, but... Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had the same agenda. It was to make good music and write good music. But sort of the vision was always the same. I mean, favorite bands, same influences. Everybody's heading that way.
Yeah.
But we would have fights about, you know, who's going to be pushing the gas or turning the wheel or something. But, you know.
Yeah.
So I just have this... songs like there's a few songs that are sort of the strong songs that I remember writing. For example, Ljós í stormi. I mean, I remember endless time. It's a 10-minute song, and you know, you get so sick of it, because we would just replay the song, record it on the duct tape, go outside, smoke a few cigarettes, talk about it. Let's do this, record it again, go out again, smoke a few cigarettes, listen to it again. Constantly. No lyrics are written until the studio. So this is just me screaming constant. And I would sometimes do, when I would be writing the vocal lines, I would just put the guitar away and say, guys, you just play this riff for like an hour and I'll just write the vocal lines.
At this point, did you have anything in mind of what you wanted the album to be, or were you just being so stuffy and having ideas? This,
nothing like that discussed. And with no idea of, I mean, I learned one thing is that, because when we were doing the Cold album in Sweden with Frederick, I had all this, and you know, we spoke about this stuff. So we had all these ideas about how the drums were supposed to sound, and I would be like, Frederick got this Rastafarian drum guru to come in to tune the drums, and they were like, not the way I had wished it. I'm like, no, this is not working. No, this is completely wrong. And Frederick was like, trust me. I'm like, no, it can't be. Trust me. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I'll trust you for 10 seconds.
That's all classic you get.
Me. That's all you get. And then I go in and listen to it, and it's the best sounding drums I've ever heard. I'm like, fuck, you were right.
Yeah.
So I sort of learned that you can't really, you can have some idea today how you want something to sound, but 3 months later, through filtering and the studio and all this microphone stuff, it's going to sound completely different.
Yeah.
So we had no, because Frederick is a great, I mean, he has a great ideas. You know, he's a great guy with sort of, you know, moving air, like he always called it. It's just moving air here. And
yeah.
And it's like capturing the weather. I mean, you can go stand on a mountain in Iceland today and the weather's going to be a certain way, and I'm just going to capture that, like a Polaroid it. That's the way you write albums. So we just start writing songs. So I don't know how, so a few songs, of course, that were more weird. I mean, but this was very much band-oriented. No one showed up with a song, really. I think the best that shows how this was band-oriented is probably the Fjara song, which is probably the most sort of how a band works. Thing is that Gummi had been in London. He had been watching Boren on the Club of Gore in London. In the club, at the Borderline
right.
In Soho.
Yes.
And he's telling me how he loved this band. It's you can sort of, the dynamics were so great. You can hear the hi-hat and the cymbals with the brushes. And he was just dynamic stuff. And so that sort of gave me an idea that how we could start the song by using the snare, the hi-hat as the snare in the beginning. So just one led to another. So Avar came up with a certain lead, sort of Iron Maiden lead, that he was an idea. I learned it wrong, so I turned it around a little bit. That became the vocal line. And Gringo came up with the chords. So everything was like, this song could not have happened without anyone missing in the band.
Right.
So
yeah,
that
yeah.
being the biggest song, so it was very, very band-oriented, the way, and I believe, I'm a firm believer that most magic will work from band-oriented stuff like that.
I remember at that year's Eisnaflug, so roughly June, it was still a few months away from the release, you guys showed me a few songs of the album. I remember it was you and Gumi, and we were at one of those houses near the festival. Someone was there and someone was cooking, and I remember I ate whale for the first time in my life, so that's a very clear memory. And you guys showed me Fjara, and I remember that you were still doubtful about it.
Yeah,
you showed, it didn't have a title, or at least you didn't tell me. It was just a ballad. We have a ballad on this record, one of you.
Well, we called it the Eurovision song.
So. exactly. I remember that expression. And then you played it, and I was just like, I think Gunnar was with us at the time. And I was just looking at Gunnar like, What the hell is this? This is amazing. But I noticed that you guys were still doubtful if that still made sense. Was that somehow the mood with that song or with any others? Did you go through
Yeah,
those doubts?
that was sort of cult number two, because when we did Cult, it was coming from being a black metal band. The rules in black metal land in the 90s were different than it is in the black metal land
Very
today.
much, yeah.
Fenris was not smiling in the 90s.
Exactly.
So, you know, so that's different. So when we did Cult, the clean singing, I was so fragile, so so unconfident. I mean, people are gonna laugh. People are gonna say I'm such a bad singer because I'm trying to sing here and I can't really sing. So today, this is the least of my worries today. I'm like, you know, you can't hurt me by calling me a bad singer. I don't give a fuck. Anyway, so that was even more soft. But we were listening to bands like Duran Duran or Air from France or even Abba and stuff. We don't give a fuck. I mean, we like soft stuff, a lot of it. So, and we knew sort of this is taking the soft, our soft sort of love of soft music to the next level. And there still exists a recording from that tape, Fiara, with a black metal ending on it. So, because we were like, oh man, they're gonna kill us, like we give a shit. But we thought they're gonna kill us if we make this ballad. I mean, it's a sellout, it's a soft song. I mean, you know, I mean, like, we gotta have some, take it to the, and of course, you know, play by the rule book has to have a black metal ending, like a black beat, because that's what they say. It's, you know, because, you know, so they will like us. Well, that sort of that didn't stick long. We were like, fuck it. I mean, we can't do that. This has to be like
You
that.
should
So,
release that as a jokey B-side sometime. Fiara,
hey man, dude,
the Norwegian BM mix kind of thing.
we have four versions of Fjara already. And I think, you know, it's gonna come out later. But we have this sometimes somewhere. I mean, where I'm here, all the backing vocals, male and female, we're all recorded here in my apartment. So I'm in the same apartment where the female vocals from Fiara, the backing vocals, which were, by the way, were done by our current drummer. So Hallgrimur, our current drummer, he recorded or he did all the backing vocals in Fiara. You know, and even the saxophone solo in Melrakka Blues is done in my living room here.
A lot of
So,
history in those walls.
yeah, I mean, I probably, if you were there sort of seeing this, we did probably, I don't know if we did Fiara, we did Melrakka Blues, which is on the album, which at that time was called Black Zombie. That was the working title. I mean, usually, Fiara was working title Misery.
Misery, right.
Misery. Melrakka Blues was working title Black Zombie. It's just what I remember here. What else? Djáknin was it's a sort of almost, I remember we did it in three parts. It was like the beginning was like a Neil Youngish. I was trying to do a sort of the best Neil Young improvisations that I could. I mean, it's recorded on a 60s Epiphone guitar. It's a lot of tremolo stuff. And when we were recording, I don't know if you can hear it on the album, in the beginning of Djáknin, now I'm only talking about the first and the last song anyway. I'll get to the others later.
And the big ones, all the 10-minute plus
Yeah.
songs as well.
So how much time do we have? 4 hours.
As much time as you want, it's
Okay.
fine.
So when we were recording Djáknin, there's a guy outside the studio because there's a river running through the studio. So there was a guy with a shovel digging sand. Like exactly the mo the scene from The Good, Bad and the Ugly when he's when this when they're digging the, when they're digging the grave. So and we were like, we're doing Djáknin, and there's a guy digging with a shovel taking sand outside. So we took two stereo mics, a pair of mics, put it out there and recorded a guy digging sand. So you can, and that's happening in real time outside our studio. Yeah, so there's a river running and a guy digging sand.
Spontaneously unplanned.
And if you listen to the beginning of Jocelyn, you can hear this shit.
Right. Yeah.
So, and of course it's 52 guitars in the end. It's and that was sort of, if there's a song by Thin Lizzy, it's called Are You Ready? That you can Google it up if you go to Thin Lizzy, Sydney Opera House, Are You Ready? Uh-huh. You can hear a part of Jokinen there by Thin Lizzy. It's a total rip off. But some things you can rip off, like blues. I can rip off blues songs. It's public domain. So
yeah,
it's not like we were ripping off Smells Like Teen Spirit or something.
yeah, it wouldn't get you in that trouble at least.
Well, they ripped off Killing Joke, so you know
exactly. So yeah.
another. Sort of this a lot of this is funny songs here. I think one song was written in the studio, which would have been the Kukl song. That was written in the studio. I think it was just Svavar and Sæþór had some.
That's the last song on the first disc. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So they just had some parts, three parts, and we just sliced them three together. And Sigur Rós had been touring, so there was like a couple of Sigur Rós. I think both of their bass drums were there. Mm-hmm. So Gummi would just basically we just put microphone between them, and Gummi just hit both of the Sigur Rós bass drums. Doof, doof, mm-hmm. doof, doof. So that's the percussion. It's the both Sigur Rós drum bass drums there.
Ah, nice. When did you realize that you had over 80 minutes of music that you do the crazy double album thing?
But that's another thing. We didn't know that because we just wrote music, and we was just writing for 3 months and we came up with a lot of stuff. But there's not many songs that we threw away. We were really, it's always been very, what shall I say? So some bands throw away stuff. We don't have many songs that we've thrown away.
Yeah.
We're not polishing shit. If it's shit, we throw it away, start from the beginning. So these are the songs we wrote. And I don't think we threw any. I mean, we throw away like the ending of the Fiara stuff and stuff. But
yeah,
that didn't happen until I think Michael told us, oh, it's a little bit longer than a normal CD. So we were like, oh,
good impression.
Well, you should ask for Svavar to do it. He's master. And anyway, so we were like, oh fuck. So what song do we need to skip? That was our first reaction.
Yeah.
Until Michael said, how about a double album?
Double album.
Double album.
Yes.
So when he said double album, we said, okay, monsieur, it's a double album. So that was Michael's idea.
Right.
So, and then we sort of came up with, because it looks more pro now, that like it was planned because it's six songs each side. It's like a 12 song album. That wasn't the case because the song Stenningskalti Drömfari og Stormfari, that's one song really split into three parts.
Yeah.
That's basically us imitating again our favorite band, Fields of the Nephilim. Because for Her Light, it's like Dead But Dreaming, it's like four songs, Paradise Regained and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So we made three songs out of one, so we could make it into 12 songs, six songs each side, or CD.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, in the rock and roll rule book, there's a few things in the rock and roll rule book, Jose. Okay.
Yes.
Alcoholic and drug rehabilities, right?
Obviously, yes.
you have to fire a key member. You have to bang each other's girlfriends.
Exactly, yes.
You have to sue each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to make a double album.
Some of the basics, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is, everybody knows this.
Exactly, yeah.
if you don't know this, haven't done this, you're in the wrong game, dude. You know, stick to chess or something.
Yeah, exactly. So were you confident, basically? It's more or less the same question that I asked before about Fiara. But when you had this, you knew you were going to do the double album, you had the Eurovision song, you had a couple of 10-minute songs with very catchy riffs. How did you feel about it before the release?
I have always, ever since we did our demo, which is in May 1995, when we did that, I thought, in December 95, I got it even stronger. And the feeling is that, oh my God, this is really good stuff. I'm never going to be able to come up with better riffs than this. We might just quit ahead now. So that's what I thought when we did Tervalatlat, because I was so fucking proud of it. And I thought, I wasn't more confident than that. I thought, I will never do anything better than this.
Yeah.
Because I can. I mean,
I've peaked with it.
Yeah, and then we do Blood and Spirit. And then, of course, it's the same. And we did Masterpiece. I mean, it was like, because there was no label interest. We had basically a home studio in the middle of nowhere. We were like, oh man, this is not gonna sound as good as the last one. And then it did. And then we did. Then we were recording because most of our albums have sort of been a success, because if not on a major scale, but so we were kind of cocky 2 years after Masterpiece, and we were doing Cold, and I thought, no, this is not. It's not cutting it. It wasn't until we were mixing Cold. I remember we were mixing She Destroys again. And Frederick, so I was playing the bass, or Frederick was putting up the faders. I'm hearing the bass, and we were mixing She Destroys. I'm like, maybe this is, just as good. So I've always had this. And then I'll be like Cold in a, this is kind of impossible for me to answer, because there was never a point sort of, there was maybe one point when we had done the whole Fiara, and Frederick had a lot to do with it. We would do a lot of backing vocal stuff with Fiara. We would do sort of producing a lot of backing vocal ideas. We would take the song to our friend Haldor Dore, and he would play the whole Wurlitzer stuff. So we would have Rhodes, Wurlitzer, backing vocals, and all the stuff. And some fake MIDI strings. We don't use a lot of that, but I think we did a little bit there. I think when we were mixing Fiara, we sort of knew that, oh, fuck, what have we done? You're like Britney Spears, oops, we did it again. I mean, we did something so out of our comfort zone, and we sort of, fuck, what have we done? I mean, the heavy metal kids or the black metal mafia is going to abandon us now, because, obviously we've gone sell out. But this idea is more like a joke than reality, because we don't really give a fuck.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, by then you were already pretty much not a black metal band with Cold and everything. I mean,
yeah, but then again, I mean, Ljós og Stormi is pretty much sort of our classic heavy metal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stylist song next, and then we have Thin Orð, which is sort of like Drop Down to Sea. It's kind of heavy.
So it was still acceptable by the.
Yeah, I mean, but
out there, but acceptable.
so not
Eurovision.
We knew sort of that. Even this last chorus goes fifth higher. It's like the standard pop song stuff. We like trying ridiculous stuff, even like we did later on with Ota, fucking banjo. It's just some ridiculous stuff. So we like.
In that article that we did, I remember you mentioning the when you recorded the choir with Gunnar Ben from Skalmål. Oh, yeah. That was a highlight, wasn't it?
So that's, I mean, that was a interesting song. I think we sort of, when we were writing Svarta Santa song, half of it was some riffs that I came up with. I think it was very influenced by Let Me Put My Love Into You by AC/DC. Mm-hmm. So this three chord stuff. So we had written half of it, and we were missing sort of the end part, or so the highlight of the song. And
yeah,
so we were sort of going into sort of our archives. You know, we don't have archives, but sort of digging deep. Do we have something from our past that sort of we have left out? And so even before Gringo joined Solstafir, joined Solstafir around late 90s. Mm-hmm. So in 95, 96, me and Gumi have a side project called Mind as Mine. Mm-hmm. I'm playing bass, Gumi's playing drums, and Gumi sang for a while. And Gringo's playing guitar. So we would do some demos. And I don't remember how or why, but for some reason, someone came up with, well, we have the stuff from Mind is Mine. I mean, never used it. So we started listening to it, and we found this part that Gringo had written, this chorus with this some melody over it. And
right.
And we sort of tried it, and it fit perfectly. And then I don't remember who came up with the choir idea. Someone did. And Gunnar Ben, of course, I knew from, I had been singing with Skalmold.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, the organist from Skalmold. And
yeah.
And we asked him, can you do this? And he was like, sure I can. And because we only had like a 3-chord riff. Nothing much happening there. Mm-hmm. With a simple melody. And we sent it to Gunnar, and he, you know, does something. And then he said, oh, we can come to my school where I'm teaching on Tuesday. And we all showed up because we drank every day at the studio. I mean, every day there was a new drug or brand of drink, right, in the studio every day.
You compensated for the yogurt during the writing. You compensated in the studio with all the substances.
Studio was not a sobriety stuff.
Right.
So we would go there probably hungover as well, into a children's school.
My dog doesn't approve of that.
Yeah. So into the children's school, with this, like 20 people in a choir, and we had never heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Just Frederick set up stereo mics, and I think we were all there. Maybe Gumi wasn't, but I remember Gringo and Swawar being there.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you know, the silence in the room.
Yeah,
because we're recording. I think Gunnar has in his ear, and he does like,
yeah.
Then he just like silently does 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then the angel choir kicks in.
Yeah,
and there's this total silence, and an angel choir singing some melody based on a melody that Gringo wrote in his bedroom, 1996.
Oh my god!
And then they did that. We were like, "Fuck!" Oh, then enough of the harmony. I'm like, "What? There's a harmony?" of course, there's a harmony, silly boy. So they did like,
you rock harmony. Musician.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. So then, you know, and even to that day, I mean, when we do this in a rehearsal space, I mean, and the choir kicks in, I'm like, fucking hell, man, it's breathtaking.
It's a bit of magic right there, isn't it?
That's a pure, yeah, yeah. So, and they even played with us live. We've only done this album live once. We did it a release gig when it came out. The choir sang with us, and we, you know, they were all dressed up in flower and shit.
Oh. Speaking of that, how are you expecting this Roadbend performance to be? Do you have to prepare anything? Because there are songs here that you haven't really played, although a few of them are regulars, but a few of them aren't. So will prepare for that?
I think it's 4 songs that Hallgrímur has never played.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 4. I mean, some of them, I mean, Svartisandr has been on set list through the years.
Yeah.
Well, if I take it from the beginning, I mean, Ljósastormi has always been on the set list, so we know that really well. Second song is what? Þín Orð, that used to be on the set list. Hallgrímur has played it. Fjara is still on the set list.
Fjara, obviously.
What's song number 4?
Sjúkiskuggin.
Yeah, that's never, Hallgrímur's never played that. So that's not been played since We probably played that the last time with Gumi in Romania on Dark Bombastic Evening.
Ah, right. That was a while ago.
That's a while ago. Yeah, so five is what?
Aera.
Aera. Never been played with Hardgrimmar. So that's another song that he hasn't played. Yeah. They used to be on set with.
And then Kukul to.
Yeah, Kukul, we have played with Hardgrimmar. We did that on the string tour a few years ago. With there's no strings on it on the album, but we did it with string chorded. So amazing. Then
disc two is Melraka Blues to open.
Yeah, that hasn't been played without Gumi, so that's another song.
Yeah. Then the trilogy.
Trilogy is another one, but it's not that difficult. But it's never been played without Gumi.
Yeah, and then Svartirsandar and Djaknin.
Yeah, we played that hundreds of times.
Those used to, yeah. So
yeah. So there's a few songs there.
Some work, but it doesn't seem too excessive to learn.
But then again, I mean, it gets more difficult. I mean, being a band with many albums, and especially if you have 10-minute songs. I mean, we get offered these co-headline tours, and they said, oh, and it's 70 minutes a band per evening. That's fine for you. I'm like, are you fucking mental? It's like six songs.
It's like six songs, yeah.
So, you know, it's
not even one song per album anymore for us.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you can't. I always follow sort of Metallica and stuff. I mean, they never skip one. They never skip Sandman, never skip Master of Puppets, and never skip Seek and Destroy or Creeping Death. So there's a few songs that we sort of feel that we can't skip. I mean, like Fiara, Ota, and Goddess, and stuff like that. So that's okay. We know the three songs, mandatory songs. We have three songs we can pick. So it gets more difficult. So it's, you know, usually we play for 2 hours while we're touring, headlining.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun playing 2 hours. So the album before, we went to Sweden, to Gothenburg, to record the Cold album with Fredrik in his working studio. But for this one, we recorded in Mosfellsbær in Iceland. And this is the old Siguro studio. It's their build-up. And Fredrik would come there. He, you know, at that time at least, was a day drinker. Mm-hmm. So were we. Mm-hmm. Well, you know. And there was sort of a lot of drinking or smoking or snoring or whatever you could do. and I remember now, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous though, because when we were mixing the album, we were hammered fucking drunk.
Wow.
I remember Fredrik somehow, I don't know if persuading, what's the right word here? He talked us into persuading. That, you know, in order to get into the mood, we'd have to drink a lot of brandywine. So,
oh my god!
So the album is sort of we hammered drunk, everybody, and just blasting the album. That's my memory. Maybe someone else has, but hammered drunk, we're blasting the speakers onto a tape, and then back from the tape to the recorder in the computer.
Well, Brennivin is good for erasing memories, so you never know.
So there's a lot of stuff that, you know, because you couldn't write a book about, oh yeah, how did you mix this album? I have no fucking idea.
No idea.
Probably all the meters were running red and something wasn't plugged or something, you know, this distorting, so, you know.
Yeah.
And
yet, it sounds like he does, so... I don't want to make an example of that. I don't want to encourage anyone to drink brennivin, but
something worked, then, right? Then on I think it was 15th or 16th of May, we had booked a gig in Bergen, which we had been booked, you know, half a year before. So we always knew that we would have a sort of a timeout in the middle of the session to go to Bergen and do a gig, sort of old obligations. Or like Metallica did, Escape from the Studio.
Escape from the Studio.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. That was our Escape from the Studio. Anyway, so we fly to Bergen. So while we are in Bergen, Frederick starts, you know, seeing this girl that apparently he wasn't supposed to see. Mm-hmm. And when we come back after Bergen, this is during a weekend. I'm at a friend's place. It's like 7 a.m.
Right.
In an after party. Mm-hmm. And my roommate or flatmate, he calls me and said, "You gotta come home right now." I'm like, "What? It's like 7 a.m. Why do I need to come home now?" And he says, "Well, your drummer just came through the front door here. He smashed the front door and he's beating your producer to death right now."
Oh my God.
I'm like, "What? You said what?" "Yes. So right now he's punching him in the face. I'm gonna fucking kill you." And I'm like, "What?" And he said, "I'll give you him the phone." And, you know, I couldn't talk to anyone. It's just some yelling and stuff.
Yeah.
And I come home. I walk home. It's like 7:30 a.m. or something. I'm hammered. I come here. My flatmate is quite upset. My front door is in pieces. Wooden door. It's almost like he came through it with an axe.
Oh my God.
I don't know how he did it. So he came here basically to beat up Frederick for, you know, doing stuff with this girl that he probably shouldn't have done. And he beat him up. They go walk out of the apartment, have some talk or something. Then Gumi goes to the airport in the morning, flies to the other end of the country, and he doesn't show up again in the studio. Okay. So for the last 7 to 10 days, it's just me and Frederick in the studio.
It's just you and Frederick, yeah.
And Frederick has a black eye.
God.
And Svavar is gone. Svavar is gone back to the nuclear power plant.
Mm-hmm.
And Gringo is just this kid. So it's just me and Frederick the last week or so in the studio.
Doing your vocals, right?
Basically, Frederick is mixing and I'm recording vocals alone downstairs.
Right, yeah.
So that was kind of weird.
I can imagine.
And but the cool thing is that in this Bergen trip, we're playing Hølen, which is really cool when you're in Bergen.
Mm-hmm.
This young, handsome Norwegian guy. He comes to us and asks us if he can paint us.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, "Can I paint you while you're playing?" I'm like, "Sure." It's a kind of unusual, but sure. And so he painted us while we were playing, and he comes up to the gig and showed us, "Here, I painted you." I'm like, "Well, this is really fucking weird, but this is fucking awesome." And, I think he probably sent us the photo or whatever, but we thought, you know, so we got in touch with him, and we ended up using, in the booklet of the Svarte Sander album, are those paintings. There's no band photo. There's no band photo in the booklet. It's just the members painted from the gig in Bergen. And he ended up painting one artwork for each song. So it's like 12 photos he painted plus the album cover. So, you know.
Okay.
So that's kind of cool, you know. So in the midst of this Escape from the Studio, we got a really cool album cover. So
yeah. And the booklet looks amazing. Now that you mention it, I'm visualizing it. I'm actually looking at the shelf where it is. And yeah, the booklet looks amazing. I didn't know that story behind it, that guy. So
I have to tell you then, this is popping to my head. So when we grow up here in Iceland, there's weather forecast on the radio all the time. It's like on basically on, you know, BBC Radio 1 in Iceland. So basically called, you know, Radio 1. And it's always this, you grow up with the weather forecast. And it's always the same voice, this mature voice, this lady.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, at the time we're doing the album, she's like 70 or something. So Gringo once comes with an idea that he had sort of sampled the weather forecast and played some stuff under it. So he came up with the idea that creating some ambience and having a radio with some different guy doing it. So we were like, this is a brilliant idea. So we contacted her. She had retired, just like 72 or something.
Yeah.
So if she was willing, her name is Gerður B. Bjarklind.
Right.
So if she was willing to do this, she was like, oh, this is a really weird idea, but sure. And so me and Gummy went and we sort of sampled sort of this all this weathers, Google it up, and we made this fake, crazy weather. It's like, you know, the wind pressure and all this, you know, storm and the kinds of snowfall and raining. And so we wrote this sort of basically the worst weather in the history of mankind. Very Icelandic 80s. It was always crazy weather, 3 meters, and, you know, always some lot of fishermen dying in the storms.
Right, yeah.
So she went to the old job. I had a friend at the radio station. He would sort of record it for us, and he just gave me a CD, burnt CD with Gerður B. Bjarklind reading weather forecast for Solstad. Yeah. So that's the lady on the album. This is a sort of BBC Radio 1 voice. Yes, of Iceland.
That's awesome. I remember you told me that story when we first listened to those songs at Eisnaflug. But I'm so glad that you told it because I had forgotten about it. Yeah, yeah.
And also in that song, I remember in the middle of, we are doing, Svavar's doing this very much sort of almost like, I think we called it the Tool bass sound. I don't like Tool, but Gummy, so I really like Tool.
Yeah.
So we had like sort of Tool sounding bass. And then, of course, this was being the Siguro studio. They had tons of gear there. So we would find this 70s Moog stuff. And we would be twisting all this Moog and sort of creating a stormy weather with all these Moogs. So that's on, that's in the song again.
Yeah.
But it's... So that's our... That song is a kind of a schizo. I mean, it is three songs, like the title says. So the first part is very much sort of indie. There was a band from Iceland called Möys, sort of won the battle of the bands in the 90s, and they were very, very much sort of Cure influenced.
Yeah.
So we sort of liked them on the side because we were like, Fenris didn't like indie stuff, so we didn't like it. We liked it on the side.
You had to like it on the side, yeah, secretly.
Yeah. Can't tell. I mean, you know, it's in the rule book, right? In the 90s, black metal kids could not like indie music.
Not at all.
No. You would be, you know. Anyway, so that's sort of, we had this indie beginning that sort of fades into sort of a Ham, the Icelandic band Ham song. And then the Tool bass part comes with the weather forecast, and then the best part here comes, then the Bon Jovi part kicks in. I mean, this is the just, I'm just talking out loud the how we wrote it, because I don't know why it reminded of a Bon Jovi, but this is so Richie Sambora riff comes in, and and then after that comes in, we go straight into Caius Stoner End. So we go from this indie band, sort of Cure-ish.
To the Richie Sambora riff.
Indie band to the Ham.
To Ham.
To the Tool with the weather forecast. It's Richie Sambora and to Caius.
And then Caius, yes. It's not a combination that you will find often, I think.
It's on the album.
And it works. It's a very Icelandic album, isn't it? I mean, all your albums are, obviously. You're Icelandic. So you can
sort of.
This one is very much so, isn't it?
But that's another thing that we haven't talked about, is that the album before is in English.
Exactly, that's another thing.
So the two albums before are in English. Masterpiece of Bitterness is in English, and Cold is in English, except for the title track. Yeah. So, and you were asking before if we were confident, and so we were recording the Cold album, and that I had done the vocals in English in the studio with Frederick in Gothenburg. And I had this some stuff, some silly stuff that I thought, you know. And I said to the guys, hey, man, I want to try this in Icelandic. You know, and I do it. And I'm like, oof, like Lars Ulrich's dad said, erase this. I would delete that. And because I thought, you know, I was very fragile. I was very uncocky about this. I mean, you know, not being a singer. And I said, basically, in the booth, I basically, oh, my memory is like, I tell the guys in the booth, oh, we'll, fuck it, we'll go for the English. And they were like, no, man, we're not going to use the Icelandic here. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Come on, stop it. No, stop this bullshitting. So that was sort of the beginning of us.
Yeah.
Sort of me being singing in clean Icelandic and we sort of finding ourselves comfortable and having Icelandic singing.
That was a major move in the history of the band. Barely did you know then that you would only sing in English again on Her Fall from Grace, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Then of course you're right. But you know, but we've been doing a lot of stuff. I mean, in English live, so it's that sort of cheating because.
Sure, but in terms
of new music, I know what you mean. It was very, very strange indeed, mm-hmm. singing Her Fall from Grace, but some things just happen and you can't explain them, mm-hmm. and you shouldn't resist them. You shouldn't resist them. That song had to be in English. I don't know why. It just had to be.
It had to be. That's how creativity works. I completely agree with you. And you shouldn't think so much about it. It had to be. It had to be. It worked like that. That's fine. No.
Yeah. So, you know, but then again, I mean, I can hear, I mean, today, I'm very, today, I'm quite confident. I know what I can do. Mm-hmm. I can go sing 2.5 hours a night, 30 days in a row. And if someone's going to say, hey, you didn't pull that off, I'm looking at it, fuck off, you can't do it better, fuck off.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the best in doing what I do. You can do your thing, I do my thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I listen to this album today, I haven't listened to it in a long time, because I don't relate to these albums today. I relate to the live versions.
That's the thing. That's how I've been doing the conclusion for these features. It's kind of like that exercise. So if you listen to this album today, are you comfortable with it? Do you think
because
that was a nice thing we did?
Because if you say, listen to Fjara or Ljósistormi, when you mention these songs, I immediately connect them with how we played it the other day at the rehearsal place at the last gig.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way I sing it in the studio 10 years ago, I don't remember it. I'm a different person.
Yeah.
My voice is different. I'm more confident. And I feel like, I'm not going to say I should have done it better because it was capturing the moment, but it's not the way I do it today.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily comfortable for you if you actually play the record as it is. Because of that.
No. But, you know, I used to listen to our music back in the day, but mm-hmm. after you become a touring band.
Yeah.
I just appreciate silence more with age.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But, you know, there's just more stuff that, like, for example, the Kökl song. That's one of my favorite songs to sing.
Right.
We did that on the string tour 2-3 years ago. And I just love to sing that song. Just so the range is perfect, very suiting to me. I can yell a little bit without blowing the voice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's that's a really cool song.
Do you think this record is particularly important in the course of your career? If you look at it as a whole, was this an important step, or are all the albums like that? All those Polaroids that you mentioned.
I think in with every band, you know, it's a certain time frame. I mean, I was trying to tell this to a friend of mine, to Steppy. Mm. You know, Steppy is not.
Yes.
I mean, this sounds, it's going to sound weird because I'm not comparing anything here, but
mm-hmm.
There's a time in bands when it's just the chemistry and so at certain time. For example, if you take, let's just say, Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets, and Justice for All.
Yeah.
This is just, the band is in certain shape and mindset during a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
We probably have Ótta, Köld, Svartir Sandar, and Ótta.
Mm-hmm.
As souls that we're in that, you don't realize it at the time of being. Mm-hmm. Because you sort of, because you're in the now, that, you know, that in the present, that was the now, you don't think about it. But today, and it's just this pure living, breathing entity,
mm-hmm.
filled with some four guys making a chemistry.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain. It's like explaining spiritual matters. The more you explain it, the more silly it gets.
So, but, you know, it's, but you feel that. You feel that the place where you were as a band and as a musical relationship between the three of you, it was that period from Cult to Ótta that it manifested in a different way, kind of.
Things get different with age. It gets time. You perceive time differently. There's more bills to pay. There's more kids, there's more obligations, there's more pressure, things are different.
You're different yourself. You don't have the same everything is different. Things. So you don't have the same patience for things.
No. So from writing, no one having a steady job and just everybody goes to the same bar, everybody's, you know, there's no fighting or just you're on the same wavelength.
Everybody drinks, everybody smokes, everybody,
even everybody does the same drugs.
Exactly.
So when bands start doing shit different drugs, things are gonna go wrong, dude.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that was documented when Lemmy got fired from Hawkwinds, and people still haven't learned.
Yeah, exactly.
They're still trying that shit. This has to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably do this for $1 million gig in a private jet. It's not fun. But if no one is making serious money out of this, so that you can fake it, it has to be fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could probably find five of your ex-girlfriends that you hate or they hate you and I say, hey, Jose, I'm going to pay you $10 million. If you go with them to Cancun, stay in the same hotel room for 4 weeks. I'll pay you $10 million for it. You'll probably say yes.
Oh my God.
You'll probably give it a go. But if I say it's free beer at the bar, you won't get anything for it, but you'll get be drunk. You'll be like, fuck off, mate. Just to put it in this perspective.
Yeah.
Oh.
So do you think we have painted a faithful picture of Svartir Sandar? Have we written a few good chapters on this book?
Probably. I'm just, you know, there's always some stuff that you forget, of course. We were gonna sort of, the plan was to do strings on this album.
Mm-hmm.
But we were like, we want to do it all. We want to have a choir. We're going to have a Eurovision song. We can have a violin. We can have horns. We can have this. And then, you know, just, I think we spent a month in the studio. You know, for 30 days, we were in the studio every day.
Was it your most ambitious record in that sense? The one where you tried to have it all?
I mean, writing music, and that was the beauty of it. I mean, being, you know, a band showing up every day to work. It was not like we're going to 3 times a week or have a few beers and write a riff.
Yeah.
No. This was hard working. It was, you know,
full-time writing, job writing. Kind of thing.
Yeah. Everybody fed up with listening to the same fucking duct tape all the time. But it was for good reason. We were really sort of polishing the stone constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And then Frederick came and fucked it all up with some... Frederick had a different vision. The guitar stuff, my sort of my guitar sound consisted of 5 guitar amplifiers that he hooked it all up together. So it was a, no, I think it was 6 amplifiers. Uh-huh. It was 60s Marshall cranked to the max.
Right.
70s Marshall cranked to the max. JCM 900 cranked to the max.
Wow.
No, it was 7 amplifiers, sorry. Then we had a Vox AC30 cranked to the max.
I see a pattern here.
And then he had another Vox AC30, not cranked to the max, but with a tremolo. Mm-hmm. Full-blown tremolo on at all times. Amp number 7, a Fender amplifier, cranked. And Frederick was like, okay, we are ready. I'm like, you just stand here. I'm like, what? And it was the, it's like being at the fucking Manowar concert. Front row.
Blow your speakers with rock
and
roll.
Yeah, I mean, Wimps and Posers leave the hall.
Exactly.
I mean, so this was the, that's the guitar sound on the album. And, you know, and I was like, when I first heard it, I'm like, okay, but you're going to EQ all these guitars. I'm like, no EQing. Okay. What fucking drugs are you eating for breakfast, man? So, but he was right. I mean, you know, it was, I would never, any of us in the band would come up with this idea. I was just thinking, how's this going to work? I'm like, it did. So it's, he had a lot to do with sort of the soundscape on the album. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a lesson there too also, right? Sometimes the vision that is not your own might work. Sometimes listen to other people. Right?
Yeah, sure. Of course. Sometimes you just, You're too close to the tree to see the forest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have it. We've probably spoken about this for 15 minutes.
I think we've nailed it. I think we've painted a very good chapter of Zwartir Sander. I hope everyone listening is able to hear that very special show at Roadburn, and I hope people will go to recover that record from their shelves now and give it a listen now with all this info. It'll probably sound like a whole new record now. They'll think about all the stories that you told.
Richie some Bora shit.
Yes. Or maybe you've ruined it for a lot of people.
Yeah, I probably ruined it.
The okay, album sales probably that you still have of this record will suddenly drop. Michael will call you, what did you do? All right, man. Thank you very much for this.
Hey, man.
It was
a lot of
fun to do. When you have another special anniversary, you have a whole bunch of albums that still have many stories to be told. So the door is always open for you. You know that.
Cool, man.
All right. So
okay, thank you, Jose.
That was it. That was Adi on Zwartir Sander for the Memory Lane here at the Devil's Mouth. We hope everyone has enjoyed it. You know, you can always find the main features of the podcast. Everything is at devilsmouth.com. You know all this. It's written everywhere. I don't need to advertise it. So, Adi, thank you very much.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
We will talk soon. And bye-bye, everyone. See you on the next episode. Hope you have enjoyed it. The Devil's Mouth.